Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's another week of the Howard Eskin podcast, and that's the way you find it. The Howard Eskin podcast. You go to iTunes, search for the Howard Eskin podcast, and then when you do that, you can subscribe. It's free of charge, as well it should be, and you can get the podcast, and it will give you an alert every week when I do it. Usually I do them on Tuesdays. This week it's right before the draft, so there may be some things when you listen to it. Most people listen in the first couple of days, but when you listen to it, some things may have already happened in the draft. And that's one of the reasons I'm not going to pick the player that I think the Eagles should take or the first pick or all these other guys. But I will talk about situations, which, why are players so stupid? I'm going to get into that. They are really, really stupid. At this recording, Garion Connolly now is accused of rape. And I'm going to get into what I think did and didn't happen. Again, it's all alleged. And why these things happen is amazing, just absolutely amazing to me. But we'll get into it. Today on podcast number 4, a couple of really good guests. The head coach of the New Orleans Saints, Sean Payton, and they signed Adrian Peterson, but I actually did this a couple of days ago. We didn't get into Peterson, but I don't know that there's anything really to discuss. They got a running back for a cheap price. Adrian Peterson overvalued himself, but we'll get into that after we hear from Sean Payton. And I also have Warren Sapp. Warren Sapp, the lineup of things to talk about. His first game as a pro was in Philadelphia at Veterans Stadium. He also played the last game that they ever played at Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia, and he played the first game that they ever play at Lincoln Financial Field. And he won the last at the Vet and the first at Lincoln Financial Field. But we get into Brian Dawkins, Terrell Owens, some other things with his teams. And there's some really fascinating, fascinating things that we get into about Terrell Owens and the fight and the real story on the fight that he had with Hugh Douglas. And if you know Hugh Douglas on Twitter, once you listen to him, you can kind of connect with Hugh Douglas on Twitter, because according to Warren Sapp, it wasn't pretty for Hugh Douglas. So we'll get into all those things. Again, Warren Sapp, first ballot Hall of Famer, great player. He was caught up in all that draft stuff when he got drafted 11:30 the night before the draft. There's a report that comes out that he tested positive for drugs. I think the feeling from Sapp is that somebody put it out there because they wanted to hurt him. The Eagles did not take him with the 7th pick in the first round, as many people thought they would have, and they took Mike Mamula, and Sapp went number 12. The rest of it's history. Super Bowl, first ballot Hall of Famer, everything that you want out of a defensive tackle, never stops. But Warren Sapp is a really, really fascinating guy when you get him rolling, and I got him rolling, and you will hear how I got him rolling. And we'll make some comments after we hear from Warren Sapp. All right, I'm here with Warren Sapp, who, when it comes to college football players and evaluating talent, he is as good as anybody, and even better than those mock draft guys, those talking heads on ESPN. All right, so Warren, or Killer 99, what is, who in your mind should be the number one pick in the draft?
You know what? I haven't even, that wasn't what I was you know, even what I was on was I was listening to the coverage, and they was like, "Yeah, he's a consensus." I'm like, "What? What are we doing right here?"
Talking about Myles Garrett.
Yeah, Myles Garrett. I'm like, "What? Really? Is that?" And then they won't tell me now about the last year when he had 12 sacks. I'm like, "Yeah, okay, all right." Then go right ahead. Because what I was doing was just evaluating someone that plays a position that I might know a little bit about. That's all I was doing. I was telling you what I was looking at when I looked at the tape. When I watched the tape, when I looked at the game, I'm like, really? Is that it? Because whenever I watch the tape, and you're talking about the number one pick in the draft, love and technique should not be two things that we're talking about. Does he love it? And is his technique sound?
You know, when he has sacks, looking at the numbers, he gets most of his sacks, or at least half his sacks, and they're not Division I schools. Did you notice that against the better teams?
Listen, the number one question that I was asked in the process of being considered to be the number one pick was, of your 12 games, which one would you like for us to look at? And I told him, pick one. Because I knew the player that was on the tape every time was the same player going to work, kicking butt and taking names. I wanted to know what his answer to that question was.
You know, when you look at Myles Garrett, what is it when you look at a player, and obviously as a Hall of Famer and playing at a high level throughout your career, what is it that you look for when you say coming to work, loving the game, you know, all those things?
No, we're not even talking about that part once you become a pro. That's a totally different man, because now you have bills to pay, mama to take care of, maybe some kids and a whole bunch of other stuff. That's different. We're talking about a college kid that this is the greatest job interview you have as you come to work, as you go to school, get your books, and go to work every week. You only play one day. The other five, six, what are you doing?
And he's just not that guy.
I mean, I turn the tape on and you don't see that guy. You don't see the best. You turn the tape on, you don't say that's the best player in the country.
When you look at that position, have you noticed, and I don't know how many players you have looked at, have you noticed guys that the Eagles somewhere along the way have to get a defensive end? They need a rusher off the edge. They need somebody to put.
Don't everybody need one?
Yeah, well, everybody needs one, but the Eagles are 14, so maybe they can get one. What is it you look for from that player? Just what makes a speed rusher? Now, you are obviously a tackler.
I mean,
but you
speed
got to
would
the
make a speed rusher, but I'm not. That ain't what you. I mean, what you look for is someone who has the instincts and the ability to be able to throw a fastball and then counter it, because that's all you need is two moves. I tell kids all the time whenever I work with them, I say, you know what, Mariano Rivera had 600 plus saves with one pitch. Because he was damn good with it.
He did.
That's what you got to be. That's what you got to do. So you got to go out every day and do it. When you go through a door well and you walk in your kid and you walk in your dog, put a pass rush move on the door well. Don't just walk through it. Live it.
Have you looked at any of the quarterbacks that are in the draft?
I was listening to him talk about this North Carolina kid who his last, seven games, the last four games he beat the Citadel. I'm like, holy Toledo.
But he's going to be a top 15 pick.
Yeah, and he beat the Citadel his last four games.
he beat more than the Citadel, but yeah, he didn't. Yeah, I get it. But well, they talk about Mahomes. John Gruden, and obviously you know John.
Yeah, I know.
He never really comes out and says who he likes and who he doesn't like. When he does,
no, it's just all a little nitpicking and a little bit of this, a little bit of that. They won't give you the real Johnny. If you get the real Johnny and sit him down and they give you the uncut, you'll get a better appreciation for him.
Well, did you like Carson Wentz when he only played at North Dakota State, and I understand it's not a Division I school.
No. I tell people this all the time. When you're talking about the quarterback position, can he read coverages and does he have the arm strength to make the throws? That's all you got to be able to do. Can you make a decision and then believe in that decision and then deliver the rock? Because I learned something working with Sims for 4 years on Inside the NFL. You don't see a lot of those throws.
With whom?
Phil Simms told me this point blank. He looked at me and said, "Big boy, you think when I got back on that fifth step, you think I saw a lot of those throws? I looked, so I'm running. I'm like, okay, now let it go."
And which quarterback are you talking about?
Phil Simms, the guy that went 22 for 25 in Super Bowl.
I remember. I was there.
That one.
Yeah, okay. Well, what quarterback in today's game does...
And we're talking about a game that was a lot smaller windows, right?
Right.
This thing is wide open now.
So, again, I'll go back to Carson Wentz. Did you or he like Carson Wentz?
I like Carson. I didn't have a problem with him. The guy threw the ball and, you know, could read coverage and was a bright guy. I mean, does he develop his body? Because that's the biggest thing you have to realize when you leave college is you just left a little boys' league and now you're going to where men have three or four kids and they're grown. This is a grown man's league. And are you going to take care of your body to now to where you could come to work and do grown man things? Because that's the one thing that people talk about with Tom Brady that, you know, is just so overlooked. You remember that picture of him at the combine?
Yep.
That don't look like nothing would look like that stepped on that football field. You have to take care of yourself. Go in and do the things that you need to do.
Well, when you won the Super Bowl, Brad Johnson, if I remember correctly, was the quarterback. But
yes,
I wouldn't call Brad Johnson one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. So what does a quarterback – you don't have to be the best. You just have to play the best, right?
No, you just have to be efficient for your ball club because each team has a different need of their quarterback.
And Tampa was different than other teams, so –
No. I mean, the thing about it is Gruden just wanted a quarterback that was a little more mobile than Brad was. Brad just wasn't – I mean, Brad was the old point guard. He was going to decipher it and be able to make a decision in no time. He just had some lead feet.
Hey, do you –
the boy had lead feet.
But he still did the job.
Oh, no, he did more than the job. He excelled. I mean, my man, don't talk about my quarterback unless you're talking about a champion.
All right, so now let's go back to your days against the Eagles.
Oh.
Now, the last game at the Vet, and I know you love to talk about that to people in Philadelphia, what do you remember about the last game at Veterans Stadium?
standing in the middle of the field after we won the game and looking around like, okay, where are they going to roll out the stage? Because I wasn't worried about getting hit with snowballs. It wasn't snowing that day. I'm like, they got that unless they got some batteries or something to throw. We'd be all right. They'll roll out the stage, and then I'm going to look around, and there's not one Buccaneer around. I am the only one on the football field at this point.
You just wanted to rub it in.
No, I was waiting on them to roll out the stage. Don't they want to roll out the stage and give us a trophy out here in front of everybody and show the world? And, man, we went there in the back in a little locker. You know that locker room was little and old, man. We went in that little locker room, I ran in the locker room and looked up there, and they handed out the trophy. They was like, there he goes, because everybody was looking for me when I got to the locker room. Like, man, we're supposed to be outside. What are y'all doing?
Well, they didn't want to roll out the stage for you guys to celebrate in Philadelphia. They didn't want to have that.
Why not?
Well, because you were going to the Super Bowl and not the Eagles.
It wasn't my problem.
So, what do you remember about Donovan McNabb in that game?
The thing I remember about the Eagles offense that used to frustrate me so much, I'm like, fellas, their two best players are 5 and 7 yards in the backfield already. There's no way they should be able to beat us. The best players they have on their offense are in the damn backfield 4 and 5 yards deep. There's no way they can beat us. Come on. This is getting ridiculous that they're beating us every time.
Well, so, in other words, you're criticizing the head coach for having, what was it, Brian Westbrook, I guess, right?
No. I'm telling you that it had nothing on the outside. What was it, James Trash and the crew?
Yeah, James you're right.
Pinkney Trash. And the tight end that couldn't run very well.
I don't even remember.
Chad.
Chad Lewis? You're killing Chad Lewis now, too.
Huh?
You're killing Chad Lewis, huh?
No, I'm not killing him. I mean, he couldn't run very well, but he could catch the ball, and he's effective, no doubt about it. But he wasn't going to threaten the field.
All right, so now let's take it. You you go through the playoffs and you go through the Super Bowl. Now you go. Now you come back to the Eagles' new stadium, Lincoln Financial Field, and you win again.
Goose Eagle.
How does that happen?
Because the Gruden, and I'll tell you where it manifested. October the 20th, when you guys beat us for the last time, it was 20-10.
Uh-huh.
You remember that one?
Yep.
And we got on the bus, and I mean, that was a third, fourth time in a row, if you count the end of the 2001 season with the 9/11 game at the end of that year. That's four times in a row that I had been beaten by the Eagles. And I got smoke coming out of my ears. I was just flaming. And Gruden gets on the bus, and he says, "I got it." And that's the worst. That's the only two words you can't say to me in a football environment is "you got it," because no one ever got to anything unless it's already won. And we just lost this game 20-10, and he gets on this damn bus, and he says, "I got it." I grab him by the shoulder, and I turn him around. He looks at me with this look like, "What the hell are you doing?" I'm like, "Did you just hear that, Brooks?" And I'm not even looking at Brooks. I'm looking at Gruden, because Brooks is in the seat beside me.
Yeah, the linebacker. Okay.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame linebacker.
Right.
He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "I was like, Brooks, did you hear what he said?" He's like, "I heard it." I looked at him. I said, "I'm going to bring you back to this shithole, and I'm going to make you prove it."
Okay. but the link wasn't the shithole that...
No. I'm telling you where it manifested was the last time y'all beat
it.
So when we came back in the championship game, we had the blitz blocked up. That's why Joe Jerevicius catches that ball, and Blaine Bishop is still chasing him right now.
Okay, so did you have questions about your head coach, John Gruden,
at
that
time? No, I had questions about the plan that we had against, God bless his soul, Jim Johnson, the great Jim Johnson, and that defense and the blitzes that he was just throwing at us. I'm like, we got enough people to block it. We're just not blocking it. And it was because we couldn't identify where it was coming from. But you want to hear the greatest story I've ever heard?
Go ahead.
And this happened at Mike Allstott's Ring of Honor ceremony. We were sitting there. It was me, Mike Allstott, Joe Jerevicius, and Brad Johnson. We was at Leroy Selman's, and we was having pulled pork. Oh, my goodness. Great pulled pork at Leroy Selman's. Anybody, if you're ever in Tampa, you got to go. All right. We're sitting there having the pulled pork sandwich, and Brad's talking. He's not having it. Brad, and, you know, we're drinking, and, you know, the story gets bigger and greater every time. And we just go through this thing, and I told him about, you know, the story I was just telling you that I was telling Gruden about the protection, and he was like, "We got the protection." I'm like, "Don't tell me nothing else about it." I said, "I'm just bringing you back here, and we got to go to work. We got to score more than 7 points, 3 points, 10 points. We got to win the game." All right. Brad says, he's like, "Sapp, I almost changed the play."
Oh, my gosh.
I said, hold on. Before you tell the story, can I get another drink, please? So Brad goes through this sequence of events. He was like, Sapp Daddy, I tell you, no lie. He's like, "All week long we was going. And he was showing me this play. He was showing me this play, and he was showing me this formation. He was showing me this creeping safety. He was like, this is the play. This is the signal to this blitz." And he was like, "No, it ain't, because that's the signal to something else on some other play." And he was like, "No, this is the one that we got to hit." And Brad said he came to the line of scrimmage, and he said he looked up, and the safety was doing the exact same thing that he was doing on the tape. And he was like, "Do I trust this?"
Oh, my gosh.
He almost audibles out of this play that Jerevicius catches for 71 yards and pretty much starts the rally in Philly.
Well, and people in Philadelphia will never forget that. All right, so Killer 99, Warren Sapp, a first-time, first ballot Hall of Famer, evaluating Brian Dawkins, who actually played, he was on defense as well, but was on the team that played against you. Is Brian Dawkins... should he have been a first ballot Hall of Famer?
Listen, man, I've learned a long time ago when I spoke on Michael Strahan in the great city of New York, New York, so great they named it twice, that once you're a first ballot Hall of Famer, you don't have the right to tell somebody who should and should not be getting a vote. So Brian Dawkins did not get in his first time, but I tell him this, brother, enjoy the conversation that your name in. Because I know two people that just got their name called, and maybe three in Jason Taylor, Kurt Warner, and Terrell Davis didn't expect a call from the Hall this year, and they got it. So just enjoy the ride because he was one hell of a safety, no doubt about it. And I got a safety I want in, too. So I got to, you know, I'm a John Lynch man. So I take them all in. Get them all in. They played the game great. But first ballot means that Brian Dawkins had 4 or 5 sacks in a game, 4 or 5 picks. I mean, a couple, you know, run back for a touchdown. You talking first ballot? I mean, it's got to be like that legendary game. What game are we talking about with Brian Dawkins?
I guess we're not talking about any, in your opinion.
No, I'm asking because you would know a lot better than me. You watched him a lot
play
closer.
Consistently now.
No. I'm talking about that signature football game. Yeah. Like, I got a game against the San Francisco 49ers with Jerry Rice and Steve Young and the whole crew on August 31st, 1997. I had 11 tackles, 2.5 sacks. Hmm. Brian Dawkins got a game like that?
I don't think so.
That's what we're talking about when we're talking about a first ballot Hall of Famer.
So obviously you don't think he should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer.
No, I'm just maybe taking the side of the voters of why they didn't do it. I didn't have a vote.
You didn't have a vote, but I'm asking you your opinion because you got an opinion on everything.
No, he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer. I just told you why, because he didn't have a signature. Was he a defensive player of the year?
I don't think he was.
Why are we talking about this?
Well, because in Philadelphia, they want to talk about it.
They want to talk about championships in Philadelphia, but that ain't coming either. But, you know, whatever. Brad Dawkins was a good player and maybe the best safety Philadelphia's ever had.
So, in other words, it sounds like maybe he might be a while before, in your opinion, to get into the Hall of Fame.
Not my opinion. You just sitting here thinking about what I'm saying to you, because what Tony Dungy told me and Derek Brooks in 1996 when he put us on the path of Joe Green and Jack Ham was their resumes.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Green's resume is 10 straight Pro Bowls, 2 Defensive Players of the Year, and 4 World Championships.
Well, that is a lot.
You know what that's called? Chips.
Yeah.
Chips in the game. So what I put up was 7 straight Pro Bowls, 1 Defensive Player of the Year, and 1 World Championship, and 2 All-Decade teams.
All right, so John Lynch, who was a teammate of yours.
No. I'm asking you now, what does Brian – I mean, because I don't know Brian's credentials like that. And if you're sitting here telling me Philadelphia wants to talk about it, let's talk about it in a factual way. Let's not talk about it in a love, because I know what the city of brotherly love possesses for anybody that wanted Green. Because I wanted that opportunity.
How many safeties have 34 interceptions in their career?
You're the guru guy that's talking about this. Paul Krause holds the record at, what, 71, 81 or something like that?
Okay, well, that's a lot more than.
Night Train, I mean, Dick LeBeau, something like, I don't know. I mean, tell me. You're the one that's having this discussion. You're having it with a defensive lineman, and now you want to pull out stats like how many safeties got 34. How many Pro Bowls did he have?
I don't know, 4 or 5.
Wow, we're not even going to be able to tell me the very basics of it, but you want to throw out 34, interceptions?
See, now, I didn't check that because I thought you would have.
No, I'm asking. It's not about checking or anything. If you want to have the discussion, you got to come with facts. Let's not do the alt-fact Republican thing over here. Let's not do that.
My opinion doesn't matter because you're the Hall of Famer.
No, I'm just asking you as the reporter to give me the numbers in which I'm asking. How many Pro Bowls does Brian Dawkins? Let's just put him right up against John Lynch. Let's just do that. Because I got love for Lynch like the city of Philadelphia has for Brian Dawkins. Let's just put those two up against each other.
So what I think you're telling me is that...
No, I'm asking you to get the facts where we're talking about how many years. I think John Lynch has 15 years. He has 9 Pro Bowls because he had 5 in the NFC and 4 in the AFC.
Okay, so
he's in 2 rings of honors, 1 in Tampa and 1 in Denver. So,
Brian Dawkins is a 9-time Pro Bowler, a 4-time
Pro Bowler. They got 9 each.
Okay, so they got 9 each. All right.
9 each.
All right, so... And he had 34 interceptions. His biggest year, actually, his biggest year was only
5.
4.
Yeah, 4 or 5. Your safety that's in the box like him and Lynch, they don't touch many balls. And if they do, it's a deflection.
So should Brian Dawkins be in the Hall of Fame? That's my question to you.
My answer is, I wish Brian Dawkins all the best, because any Sunday that I was there and 20 was lurking, I wasn't feeling too good about it.
He had a really, really good career. But
yeah, and a really, really good career, does that equal Hall of Fame?
It's hard to say. John Lynch.
No, because when we talk about it, it's the separation between the good and the great.
John Lynch only had 26 career interceptions.
Like I said, guys that sit in the box, don't touch me. Dawkins had 8 more.
So you shouldn't be judged on that, is what you're saying.
No, what I'm saying is, judge you on the impact in the game. And what I say about John Lynch is the third best strong safety to ever play the game behind Ronnie Lott and Jack Tatum.
Okay. Well, that's pretty good. That's pretty high praise.
Period. That's how I bring the case with John Lynch. John Lynch is the best strong safety in the National Football League. The executioner and Ronnie Lott. Ronnie Lott is number one, and the executioner is number two, and then John Lynch is three. If you have another safety that the middle of the field was commanded better than those three, let me know.
So John Lynch, in your opinion, should make the Hall of Fame next year. And I think he should, too.
I've been thinking John Lynch has been in the Hall of Fame the last 2 years.
Okay, well, that brings us to Terrell Owens. Now, why the hell is he...
That's a joke in itself. I told a high-ranking official at the Hall of Fame, I pulled my hat off at the Hall of Fame, at the Super Bowl, and put it on the table. I said, y'all making it tough for me to wear this brand when we're putting the 55th all-time leading rusher in the Hall of Fame. And Tony Romo has more passing yards than Kurt Warner.
So why doesn't Terrell Owens, why is he not in the Hall of Fame, in your opinion?
Because of one workout in the Philadelphia suburbs in the front of his yard.
And you remember the sit-ups.
Oh, man,
huh?
They had helicopter coverage. They had the ghetto bird out for this. I'm like, the ghetto bird out? Are they shooting? Somebody robbed a bank?
I mean, that was a beautiful thing.
The man is a specimen. No doubt about it. And there's nobody that puts on a more self-show than him ever in the game. But there's nobody other than Jerry Rice that has more yards or touchdowns.
Which
and
is amazing.
That's what we're talking about.
We're not talking
about the suburban front yard, the lawn service, the next question with Rosenhaus. None of that. None of that is what we're talking about. We're talking about between the lines, 120 by 53 and a third.
It's just, well, he should be in the Hall of Fame. And somebody
should
in there
have been
has
in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that is a joke. We agree on a lot of things.
So Randy Moss mooning them in Green Bay going to affect his Hall of Fame status? Is that what we're talking about
he's
now?
He's not getting in the first time. I don't think he's getting in the first time.
How not? Take him and Terrell for the injustice that you did to Terrell and turn it into a receiver weekend. That's what it needs to be.
What do the people from the Hall of Fame tell you when you bring up these points?
Oh, you know, I can't have that conversation with you sometimes. I wanted to know what was Dan Fouts' beef with Terrell.
Yeah, what was
I don't
was
think
his
he was
beef?
Ever in a locker room with him.
Nope.
And I don't think he ever had a premier receiver like that. I think it's something that he might have used and might have won a championship if he had.
Well, I think some people complain because they've heard about T.O. In the locker room, and not
how did that affect you at your job?
It doesn't. I mean, it just
so why would it care? Well, it didn't do nothing but make for better interviews when you did walk in the locker room, because we were trying to find out, did he really beat up Hugh Douglas? You know?
All right.
Come on.
I know. I don't know who beat up who.
Like I said, and to this day, you still don't know.
No, because neither one of them are going to tell you the truth.
Oh, no, but there's been enough fodder in there. Somebody's leaning on one side. We're not a 50-50 country. We 51-49.
Yeah, well, Hugh Douglas
going
said
one way or the other.
Hugh Douglas said he hit him. And T.O.
Hugh said he hit him?
Yep.
I'm just going to tell you this. Word on the street was it wasn't pretty on Hugh's side.
So you're saying T.O.
Your pipe is smoking. So I'm telling you, that's what I got out of it. So
you're telling me T.O. with his six-pack, it just drilled him, is what you're telling me.
I'm just telling you It was a. This is the word I got. It was a walk up and a conversation and a boom, 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 and a ooh.
And you, Douglas, is on the ground.
Hey, blue, blue, blue. Oh, that's over. Okay. That'll hit that. Okay. So we know not to walk up on T.O. talking wild.
Did you ever lose any fights in the locker room?
Listen, man, I never had any fights in the locker room. My last fight, I was 18 years old in the CSR. And I made a connection with the left cross, and got almost kicked out of the University of Miami, and never would have been heard from again. So I decided that was it. That was the end of my illustrious career of fighting.
Okay,
all my fighting would be done in the classroom, trying to get eligible, and on the football field, trying to get mom out of a dirt road on a 3-bedroom house with no air conditioning.
Well, one last topic here, and that's the draft day. Where you tested positive for marijuana, and the Eagles, instead of taking you at, I think it was 8, they took Mike Mamula. What do you remember about that day?
That night,
whatever.
It wasn't one. They tell me I flunked 7 drug tests, 6 for marijuana, 1 for cocaine. I'm like, I didn't even take 7 drug tests when I was at the University of Miami. And 3 of them were NCAA tests. So what, the NCAA... giving me a pass? It ain't like I went to Idaho. I went to the University of Miami. How could I flunk this many drug tests at this school and be the best player in college football? And nobody knew until 11:30 at night.
It was the night before, right? It was the night before.
Yeah, 11:30 at night, Sports Center at 11.
Somebody didn't want you drafted.
Well, it was Carolina had to justify why they were trading the first pick in the draft, and this monster is sitting right here.
Okay, so now...
And this is a new franchise.
All right, so now you have guys that test positive. You had Reuben Foster, now Jabril Preppers had a diluted drug test. What do you say?
Oh, yeah, and they say, all right, do you know what the best part is? The explanation that these people come up with, like, this is our first time. This is our first rodeo. Yeah, he was dehydrated, and he was drinking a bunch of quarts of water. Yeah, he was drinking a bunch of quarts of water because he had weed in his system trying to flush it.
And that's the point. Well, all right, well, tell me how stupid a play. Here's the problem. How stupid is a play?
I can't call him how stupid it is because I went there and tested positive with 23 nanograms. I'm 3 nanograms over the cutoff.
Yeah, but why would, when you know the combine's coming up, you know there's a drug test. Listen, Howard,
I was sitting there with a good friend. I can tell his story now. He's gone. God bless his soul. I was sitting there with Rashawn Salaam at the Heisman the night he won it. Me and him went up to his room after he had the Heisman and took all the pictures and everything because me and him had them built a great relationship going from the Walter Camp to Bob Hope to all the other, you know, things. It was just a cool brother. I mean, just an absolute chill brother. And we both walked up to his room and he put his trophy down. His mom was in the room. My mom was in the room. So they sitting there talking and he sit there and looked at me and he went inside his drawer, and he opened up, and he looked at me, and he had a little skinny joint in his hand. He said, brother, I say, come on, man. He's like, I just won the Heisman, dog. I'm like, listen, man, my body fat ain't going to do it. He's like, dog, I know you're working out every day. I know you're pumping. No, you got it's like 33 days. You'll be fine. That's how stupid you can be.
These guys now, it hurts. It costs them money.
No, these guys now live in a much more freer world that there's states and medicine and a whole bunch of other things. It's the dumbest thing ever.
It's just how can you – Reuben Foster is going to drop. I don't know how far. Jabril Peppers may drop now. People have questions about – he can do a lot.
No. The thing that you have questions about is their judgment because you know it's coming and – And it just shouldn't be. You can't put that on the radar.
Boy, I tell you,
because it'll turn into what it turned into for me. Like it can't be his first time. You know, it has to be something he was doing a long time. And then all these security people. That's why I'm sitting there looking at one of these talking heads. Say you don't get your security report until this week, like this many, like tomorrow. I'm like, what?
So when you
that's where the bomb is going to come from is these people, you know, following you around the strip club or wherever you're going, you know?
You like those strip clubs, too.
Well, Well, I did at the University of Miami. I mean, I had the office. The Rolex was right there. Coco's was down the street. I mean, what was I supposed to do?
You did what you were going to do. Did you play that well when you started to play against the Eagles? How mad were you with the Eagles when they didn't draft you at number 7?
You know what? I had to let that go by that time, because now you're talking about a situation where my first game in the National Football League was where?
It was in Philadelphia, right?
The for who, for what game?
Yeah.
I've gotten 22 good years out of that Sunday, my first Sunday in the National Football League. I sacked Randall Cunningham that day, had me a couple more plays. I played Guy McIntyre. I felt like a king. I mean, the people who, because there were other teams. I thought the Washington Redskins should have drafted me at number 4. What were they doing?
What was anybody doing? Because you're a first ballot Hall of Famer.
No, because you just gotta. I understand it. You know, everybody has a thing, and they told me about I think it was the year before the Brinson Buckner guy or somebody that Philly drafted the year before had an issue with marijuana, and it didn't work out too
Bunkley.
Well.
Was it Bunkley? I don't even know who it was.
No, there was something like that the year before, and they say that the owner had a real bad taste in his mouth, and he was like, this will never happen again. So I understand that when you have that kind of history and then something comes back at you like this.
You probably have a lot more stories, but I know we'll save that for another time. And you just, I'm telling you, the best story about a player, I'll leave with that. What was the best story you have about a player other than Rashawn Shalom?
Oh, man, too many stories. Like, I didn't even talk about it.
We'll save it for the next time. But they got to be. They can't be alive if you're going to tell them, I'd imagine.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't tell it on a live guy. Okay. So long, man, the greatest, because he was a good one.
It's always fun, and have fun at the strip clubs, brother.
That was when I was in college, fool.
He doesn't. Once you get him rolling, Warren Sapp doesn't hold anything back. Didn't want to get into the strip clubs, but he doesn't hold anything back. Myles Garrett. Obviously, he knows that position. He knows what it takes for a player to be really good, and he doesn't like Myles Garrett. Now, I don't know what's going to happen, again, at the time of this recording, and whether he's going to be the first pick in the draft, and I don't know why he didn't come to Philadelphia, but he's home with his family and friends, and there's a TV camera there, and, you know, all those things happen, but maybe because he was worried that he wouldn't be the first pick in the draft. Who knows? We'll have to find out, but fascinating when the last game that he won, that Warren Sapp won when he was with Tampa at the Vet, took them to the Super Bowl. And when he talks about the stage out there, it's kind of funny they never brought the stage out there. It was pretty cold. So they never brought the stage out there. And the locker rooms at Veterans Stadium were very, very small. But I'm trying to absorb the things he said about Brian Dawkins, and he wouldn't say whether he believed or didn't believe he was a Hall of Famer, but he did kind of lean in that direction. I believe sometime, someday, Brian Dawkins will be in the Hall of Fame. I don't know if he'll get in next year because John Lynch, if you listen to Warren Sapp, he's the third best player at his position at strong safety in NFL history, so he believes that he should be there next year. Then the year after that, Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu, I believe, are eligible for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And that could make it really, really difficult for Brian Dawkins. But it didn't sound, when he started to harp on, give me a signature game. Now, he's had some really good games. I don't know what you define or what you call signature games. I don't know about all that. But I do know he's had some really good games. But he's not... He was not a slam dunk Hall of Famer. I know we want to believe here in Philadelphia that he should be, and many people believe he should have gotten in. And Warren Sapp pointed to players that he didn't think should have gotten in, so maybe Brian Dawkins should have gotten in ahead of them. Well, John Lynch, he would tell you, that should have gotten in ahead of them. But I agree with him, with Jason Taylor. Terrell Davis was a really good back, but he didn't have the numbers. And fascinating that, and Sapp, Warren Sapp knows all these numbers, that Tony Romo had more of everything than Kurt Warner, He had less interceptions. I don't think Tony Romo's a Hall of Famer, but Tony Romo never won a Super Bowl and never got to a Super Bowl. And that really is a criteria, unless you're just so far and away better. Dan Marino got to a Super Bowl, didn't win it, but he was so far and away better at quarterback than almost everybody in the area, he played, almost beyond everybody else. But Terrell Owens is a fascinating story. He should be in the Hall of Fame. Dawkins will get there. I don't know if it's next year. I don't know if it's the year after. I don't know when it is, but Dawkins, I believe, will get there. I understand why he wasn't a first ballot Hall of Famer. You really have to be special. And in Philadelphia, Brian Dawkins was special. But when you look at the position, that's where you really have to judge it. He's going to get in the Hall of Fame, but there is just this little extra plum that a first ballot Hall of Famer has to be, just a slam dunk, standout, defining game type guy. I'm not going to use what Warren Sapp said, but I kind of believe it. But I do believe that Brian Dawkins will be a Hall of Famer. I don't know when. I agree with the fact that he didn't get in his first year. And I agree with Sapp that some of those guys shouldn't have gotten in that did get in their first year last year. But I remember, and here's one of the problems, and we talked about it, and I talked about it with Warren Sapp, one of the problems with Terrell Owens. I just don't think that you should judge a player in football, judge a player's character. And that's you can't judge a player's character as whether you're good enough to be in the Hall of Fame. His number's right there with Jerry Rice, which is phenomenal. You can't judge a player by his character. In baseball, there is that criteria. Character is important when voting for a guy into the Hall of Fame. But in baseball, they vote druggies in. Druggies don't have good character. There have been druggies that get in. And that's why I don't think that Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire won't get in. But I don't think Barry Bonds should ever get in. I don't think Roger Clemens should ever get in. But Terrell Owens, although he wasn't a great guy in the locker room, he was really good on the field. He was really good, and he played hard. He was a different kind of guy, a different kind of player. And I get that, and I understand that. But the fight he had with Hugh Douglas, I never really heard from Hugh Douglas the true story, other than when he threw a punch, he missed. Well, Sapp thinks he had the real story, and bop, bop, bop was the real story when it came to T.O., with dropping Hugh Douglas. And I know Hugh Douglas will hear about this. I'm going to tweet it out there. Other people should tweet it out there to Hugh Douglas on Twitter. Bop, bop, bop is what Warren said. Warren Sapp happened. I like his stories about Gruden, but he's a fascinating guy, and I hope you enjoyed the interview with Warren Sapp. Another interesting guy, because he's won a Super Bowl as a head coach. He was, and I don't know how many people remember this, he was a replacement quarterback during the strike year. I think that was 87, where they had replacement players. He was a quarterback and played in that strike year. He was an assistant with a lot of teams. He was an assistant for a short time with the Eagles. I think he did a great job with the New York Giants, because Kerry Collins, I think, is a mental midget when it comes to a quarterback. And he nurtured him into being a good enough quarterback to get the New York Giants that year to the Super Bowl. He did a great job in Dallas. Sean Payton is really, he's one of those coaches that is really good, for whatever reason, that is really good with quarterbacks. And Sean Payton, he's coming up, it talks about culture, Malcolm Jenkins, and how serious the trade talks. And it'd be interesting to hear what he says about the seriousness of those trade talks. And Brandon Cooks, who was involved in those trade talks. And I'll talk about some of the things that Sean Payton said. And I want to get into the MVP stuff in the NBA. I have my MVP, and it's not even a question for me. Not even a question. I'll get into that after we hear right now from Sean Payton.
Sean, it's not easy for a head coach to win. And obviously the building process is very difficult. When you go back and think about yourself as a head coach, what is it about the building process? And obviously in Philadelphia, we're trying to figure this all out. What do you have to do?
I think one of the things, looking back on it, and is early on establishing that culture and then matching it with personnel that fit. You know, and I'm talking about not scheme fit, but more of that player that fits your mission statement. You know, there's a work ethic involved. There's a leadership ethic involved. You know, in that early, in those early formidable years for us, Fujita ended up being an important acquisition, and it wasn't a big name. Shanley, Simino, those are just some linebackers. And then, you know, we get Jeff Fain, Hollis Thomas played an important part. He's a, you know, kind of a hold the fort nose. So I think in those early years, finding that leadership that really helps you with what you want in your locker room.
You know, you talk about culture and leadership, and now more and more every year, and I'm not saying it's a lot of guys, but there's character questions, I'll say that, and we know a couple of the players. How difficult is it for a head coach or a team to walk away from a guy who might not fit the character that I would think, talent's one thing, but most coaches want?
Well, I think we're all faced with those challenges, and I would say there are various shades of gray, if you will, and it's up to us to dig and really establish, all right, what do we feel are the behavior challenges or the character questions, and then, you know, make...
But does talent override that sometimes? You want to win.
So yeah.
They're
for someone else.
Okay, so you're one
there's
of those guys.
There's some guys that they're for someone else.
Yeah, okay.
And, yeah, I think now there are others that, you know, you do your homework on and you feel strongly about. You said, hey, this kid made a mistake. I don't think this thing repeats itself with him.
Right.
And I like him genuinely. So you make these prior to the draft, but...
Do you have to make those decisions with a guy like Johnny Manziel? I mean, obviously the names come up.
Well, you make it with Johnny Manziel. You make it with Joe Mixon. You make it with – these are just a couple.
Right.
But those are decisions you make, and then, you know, you move forward. With Manziel, it's different because there's a number of things he's having to handle prior. I met and had breakfast with him at the Super Bowl. I just never had met him during the evaluation process. So I'm not actively in the midst of getting ready to sign Johnny Manziel.
People talk about it like it's...
Well, that's that one report, and there it goes. So that being said, though, those are our yearly challenges, really. You know, those are questions in free agency, in the draft. Ultimately, the makeup of that locker room is what's most important.
You know, obviously there was discussion between you guys, the Saints, and the Eagles as far as Brandon Cooks.
Correct.
Did it get close?
The reason I would say it got close is because, you know, a phone call and a return phone call, I'd say, is not close, you know. But all of a sudden, a pattern of, let's say, 8 calls each way, you know, those are conversations then. So, yeah, I mean, I think that... there certainly was an interest in Philadelphia's part and our part in talking with them.
So, and obviously Malcolm Jenkins was a player that was
discussed. In there. Listen, you know how I feel. I've told you 50 times already. You know, I think a lot of him. And he was definitely a player that was discussed in that process. And, you know, he's someone we missed, and quite honestly, you know, we shouldn't have got out of the building the first time.
A Super Bowl is a very elusive thing, as we know in Philadelphia. We're around there for a little bit. What does it take? Is it luck? Beyond the skill to win a Super Bowl?
I think there's 3 or 4 things. I think there's leadership and vision, and that's got to be shared from ownership right through front office to the head coach. 1. 2, I think the talent on your team and acquiring the right talent. And then 3, you know, there's going to be some tough games. And, yeah, you're going to have some breaks that go your way, but those things are created. I think the leadership and vision and a functional organization, and I say that with respect to just the process, and you know, and
you forgot the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. In there. Yeah, he's in right. there. He's
you
in
didn't
there.
Forget him, I know. But
no, he's in there.
Because we look at it in Philadelphia, we say Carson Wentz, could he be the guy? You have the guy.
Can.
You have.
No, and you do too. You have the guy who's certainly a bright young guy that I think is going to provide that, you know. And so then you get into those other steps, and if you match that, you know, I think in our league with 32 teams, you start with the idea you just got to beat these other three.
He's got more than just physical ability.
Yeah.
And obviously Drew Brees is one of those
guys.
Yeah,
I like
him. Is that
what
it takes? Yeah.
Listen, I like him, but they come in all shapes and sizes, though, don't they?
Yes, they do.
You know, he's got some of those things that you look for, and I think that's certainly a great starting point.
Yeah, you know, do you ever feel you were there a short time, and obviously you have family in the area, for the fans of Philadelphia and what, you know, just win a Super Bowl, which is not easy.
Well, listen, here's the deal. Like, the Flyers hoist two back-to-back cups. Like, that buys you time and other, you know.
Then it's a long time ago.
Sixers have done it, and the Phillies have done it. So there's some cities that would like to have had those memories.
Right.
But listen, I think I know Mr. Lurie well enough, and shoot, Doug and the staff there. You know, the great thing about our league is it's not like the NBA where you have to ascend to contend to win. You know, you can make a run in our league year to year.
I don't know what the media is like in New Orleans, but I know it's nothing like it is in Philadelphia. And you, probably New York. You were in New York, too.
New York, Dallas,
how
yeah.
tough is it for a team when you have people crawling down your neck from the media and the criticism that obviously always comes?
This gets back to the smart player, though. And what I mean by that is the player maybe that doesn't have that willpower or wherewithal can get consumed by all of that,
yes.
And where the smart guy can hold the fort, keep charging forward, and understand that that's part of it.
Okay, well, good luck.
Hey,
I don't know when the Eagles play you, but
we don't play this year, I don't think.
No, you don't play this year, but good luck to you. I always keep an eye on you.
Absolutely.
And I know what you do for quarterbacks, and Drew Brees probably needed a little bit of your help, but not a lot.
No, listen, good stuff.
Okay, thanks,
Thank
Sean.
You. Appreciate
thanks.
It. Good stuff.
Thanks, Sean. Good luck. All right. Talk to you. Thank you.
One of the things that stuck out with Sean Payton, for me anyway, in this year of problems in the NFL, and there are problems in the NFL. It is disgraceful. Players are so stupid, but college players just think they can do anything they want because these universities protect them. There was protection at Florida. There's protection at Florida State. There was obviously protection at Ohio State. And we can rattle off different players that had protection at Ohio State. It's a joke. I mean, there was protection for many years, not with a player, but with the coach at Penn State. It's disgusting that when colleges are the main focal point of that community, that they protect players, and players think they can do whatever they want to do. But Sean Payton made a good point, and I agree with him. Doug Peterson made this point at the owners' meetings. Culture is really important. You need players, and you can't eliminate everybody, but you need players that do not create a bad culture in the locker room because it's going to come back and bite you in the ass. And I agree with that. And for that reason, and we'll see where Joe Mixon gets drafted. It's not going to be by – if we listen to this, and I'm putting this on tape, Joe Mixon is drafted by the Eagles. That is one of the biggest mistakes they can ever make. We know how good a player is. That bogus settlement of a civil suit where the woman that he broke fractured four bones in her face. Oh, yeah, I understand. You know, we're okay now. What do you mean we're okay? You got money. That's why you were okay. But I'm going to get into more of that, too. The Malcolm Jenkins thing, here's why I think the Eagles would consider trading Malcolm Jenkins. Next year on his contract calls for $10 million. He's not going to get $10 million for that year for the Eagles. Now, he's obviously still a very good player for them, and I understand that. But are you going to keep him next year? His age kind of dictates that he should be traded, and Sean Payton really likes him. But he's not just going to give away a player he feels he could have gotten more for, and technically I guess he did, in Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks is a good player, but you can't give up everything. But the trade talks were obviously very, 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 very serious. What it takes to win a Super Bowl, I thought, was some fascinating stuff by Sean Payton as well. So really good stuff from Sean Payton, the head coach of the New Orleans Saints. All right, I want to talk about the MVP of the NBA. To me, it's not even close. Not even close. And Russell Westbrook, okay, it's close. I shouldn't say it's close. Russell Westbrook is the MVP of the NBA. If he wasn't on a playoff team, I'd say no. But without him, that team just flat out is really weak. Houston wouldn't be as good with James Harden. I think San Antonio would probably be a playoff team, but not nearly. Kawhi Leonard doesn't have the numbers that all these other players have. But I don't care. Russell Westbrook, you know what it is to average a average, not have 40-some triple-doubles in a season, not in the playoffs, and we'll find out if he ties Wilt Chamberlain for triple-doubles in the playoffs. But to average a triple-double, he is so valuable to a team. And if they didn't make the playoffs, I might think about it. And I know James Harden is really good, and without him, the Houston Rockets aren't that good. All right, the thing I want to cap this all off with, and this is the stupidity of players in football. Now, here are the players that we've heard about, and there's got to be more players. And the problems. Reuben Foster tests positive for a banned substance. Tried to dilute it. Why did you have to dilute it? You know when the combine is. You know when the tests are coming. How can a player be just on judgment? He's stupid. Reuben Foster, just on judgment. Jabril Peppers, the same way, just on judgment. The judgment that these players don't have would worry me a little bit. Would worry me. And then a couple of days before the draft, Gary and Connolly is accused of rape. Joe Mixon I wouldn't take. We know what Joe Mixon did, and we'll see that video. Somebody will draft him. I still contend that it won't be the Eagles, just because they haven't worked him out. They didn't see him at the combine. He never visited Philadelphia. You really have to be face-to-face with a player to make sure before you do something, and that's one of the big reasons, and the obvious reason is people would go nuts in Philadelphia. But the point is, how can players get so stupid? Why are they so stupid? Stupid, stupid, stupid. Morons. These guys are total friggin' idiots. It's not even a joke. I like to say it's a joke. It's not even a joke. These guys are terrible, are clueless, are morons. Reuben Foster is a moron for even taking a drug 2 months before the drug. Well, you can't wait. You can't wait till after the combine. Same thing with Jabril Peppers. And Conley, I don't know where he's going to get drafted now. He's obviously a good corner out of Ohio State. But I also fault the universities. I mean, you saw, and it's documented, what happened at Baylor. The sexual assaults and situations that happened at Baylor. And Baylor just let it go because the players can play. Winston got accused of rape when he was at Florida State. For whatever reason, he got out of it. But Florida State allows these things to happen. I can see that. Florida allowed Aaron Hernandez to do things that I know Urban Meyer knew were really, really. And he got suspended one game for marijuana. And you knew he's done more. You had to know, if you're the coach, he's done more than that. All right. Next week. Or the next podcast, which will be next week. This is podcast 4. Next week, one of the things I want to talk about, and I'll let you know the guests next week. One of the things I want to talk about are the most overused words in sports. You can call them cliches, overused words, and I'm sick of them. You can think about it. If you listen to this, you can tweet me some, and we'll talk about it next week, and I may read some of the tweets at Howard Eskin. But you can find my podcast, somehow you found it, on cbsphilly.com/, I think it's cbsphilly.com/podcast, and you can find the Howard Eskin podcast. But the easiest way is to go to iTunes and look for the Howard Eskin podcast, and you can subscribe, and then it will alert you when I've done another one. So a lot of good stuff, I think, this week, a lot of interesting things. The draft will be interesting. We'll talk about that next week. We'll see where Joe Mixon is drafted. We'll see where Gary and Connolly, whether he screwed himself up. We'll see whether Foster screwed himself up. We'll see all of that on how all of that happened on next week's podcast. Have a great week.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.